Picture this. You're at your OBGYN clinic seeing a 40-year-old woman who is pregnant for the first time. You have just performed her first trimester screening ultrasound, which shows a thickened nuchal translucency measurement that is above normal. You explain that this is a finding suggestive of a genetic disorder such as Down syndrome, and that further testing is recommended. She sighs and says, "I knew the risk was higher because I am older, but how can we be sure of the diagnosis?" What further diagnostic testing would you recommend to your patient, and how would you differentiate between different types of autosomal trisomies using prenatal maternal serum biomarkers? And welcome to Audio Bricks. I'm Yoon Weisholtz, here to bring cellular genetics from our bricks to your ears. After our episode today, you will be able to 1. Explain how a carrier of a Robertsonian translocation is at higher risk of having a child with a trisomy. 2. Contrast the genetic etiology in clinical presentations of Down syndrome, Edwards syndrome, and Patau syndrome. And 3. Differentiate the diagnoses of Down syndrome, Edwards syndrome, and Patau syndrome based on ultrasonic graphic findings and altered serum marker levels. Have you ever heard of the term aneuploidies? Aneuploidies are chromosome number abnormalities, which includes trisomies. The term trisomy means having a tripling of a single chromosomal body. This serious genetic abnormality can have significant effects on development. Let's dive right in. Part 1. What are autosomal trisomies? First things first, there are two types of trisomies: XY and autosomal. The XY trisomies results from an extra copy of one of the sex chromosomes. They include conditions like Klinefelter syndrome, which is 47XXY, and triple X syndrome, which is 47XXX. In contrast, autosomal trisomies result from an extra copy of one of the 22 autosomal or non-sex chromosomes and include several conditions we will discuss in more detail in today's episode. But how do trisomies come about? Well, trisomies can result from abnormal chromosome separation during meiosis or from an inherited joined chromosome. The most common type of joined chromosome is called a Robertsonian translocation and can lead to trisomies in offspring. One important thing to remember is that most trisomies are embryonic lethal abnormalities. Only trisomy 21, Down syndrome, trisomy 18, Edwards syndrome, and trisomy 13, Patau syndrome, are survivable until birth, and generally only trisomy 21 individuals survive infancy. Before we dive into the specifics of these trisomies, let's see if you remember what you just learned. What are the two ways that a trisomy can come about? Trisomies can result from abnormal chromosome separation during meiosis or from inheriting joined chromosomes. Part 2. What is a Robertsonian translocation? Simply put, a Robertsonian translocation is when one long arm of one chromosome is translocated to another chromosome to become one single joint chromosome. Let's take a closer look at what this exactly means. A chromosomal translocation is a swapping or rearrangement of parts of two different chromosomes. Each chromosome is composed of a tightly condensed DNA molecule in histones. Cytologically, each chromosome has a P arm, or a short arm, and a Q arm, which is the long arm. A Robertsonian translocation occurs between two acrocentric chromosomes. What does this mean? Acrocentric chromosomes are the ones that have a very short P arm relative to the Q arm, as opposed to metacentric chromosomes, where the arms are roughly equal. There are five acrocentric chromosomes, 13, 14, 15, 21, and 22. For now, just remember that chromosomes 13 and 21 are acrocentric. I'll tell you how this is important for Robertsonian translocations resulting in Down syndrome later. A Robertsonian translocation fuses the two short P arms and the two long Q arms of acrocentric chromosomes. The fused P arms are lost within a cell division. However, there is no clinical significance because the P arms contain limited genetic information. Now, to keep track of the translocated chromosome, we use a special notation. It identifies, one, that the chromosome has a translocation, and two, where the original chromosome's genetic material comes from. For example, the Robertsonian translocation formed from fusion of the long arms of chromosome 13 and 21 is called T1321. A Robertsonian translocation decreases the total number of chromosomes from the normal 46, so a karyotype of this type would be written as 45, XX, T13, 21 if it occurred in a female. These are some pretty important concepts in genetics, so let's pause here for a quick review. What kinds of chromosomes are commonly involved in Robertsonian translocations? The answer would be acrocentric chromosomes, such as chromosomes 13, 14, 15, 21, and 22. Part 3. What are the consequences of a Robertsonian translocation? Now let's apply what we have learned about Robertsonian translocations to disease states. There are normally two copies of each chromosome in a human. One copy is passed on from the mom and one from the dad. However, when two chromosomes are joined together, such as in a Robertsonian translocation, they cannot be split in two, which creates problems. Let's work through an example where one parent is a carrier of a Robertsonian translocation between the long arms of chromosomes 13 and 21. This parent will carry three chromosomes rather than four for chromosomes 13 and 21. They would have 13, T1321, and 21. This means that there are three possible combinations for segregating these chromosomes into pairs of gametes. In pair 1, one gamete ends up with one copy of chromosome 13 and one of 21. The other gamete ends up with T1321 chromosome. In pair 2, chromosome 13 and the joined T1321 end up together in one gamete, so it has two copies of chromosome 13. The second gamete is now missing a copy of chromosome 13. Finally, in pair 3, one gamete has two copies of chromosome 21, the other gamete is missing chromosome 21. Once the gametes are fertilized by a normal sperm or egg, monosomies and trisomies can result. Pair 1 represents a third of the cases. This yields the appropriate number of chromosomes. However, the fertilization of any of the gametes in pair 1 or pair 3 would result in an abnormal of chromosomes, a monosomy or trisomy of either chromosome 13 or 21. This information is important for future parents if one of them is a known carrier of a Robertsonian translocation. In fact, only 1/6 of pregnancies where one parent is a translocation carrier results in a genotypically normal fetus. Another 1/6 of cases yields a phenotypically normal fetus who is also a balanced carrier of the translocation. The remaining 1/3 of cases result in an abnormal fetus. Specifically, 1 in 6 results in trisomy 13 or Patel syndrome. 1 in 6 yields trisomy 21 or Down syndrome. And 2 in 6 result in monosomy of chromosome 13 or 21. Some trisomies, Down syndrome in particular, are less likely to be fatal in utero. In contrast, autosomal monosomies are always incompatible with life. The only monosomy compatible with life is monosomy of the sex chromosome X, which creates Turner syndrome. Let's review with a quick question. If one parent has a Robertsonian translocation, what are the chances of having a genetically normal fetus? The chances are 1 out of 6 of having a genetically normal fetus. Part 4. What are Down, Edwards, and Patel syndromes? Trisomy 21, or Down syndrome, trisomy 18, or Edwards syndrome, and trisomy 13, or Patel syndrome, are the three most common trisomy syndromes that are compatible with life. Trisomy 16 is the most commonly occurring trisomy, but it is always fatal in utero. Any cause of chromosomes not separating correctly during the production of gametes can result in trisomy. As discussed earlier, Robertsonian translocations are one such cause of chromosomal joining. However, chromosomal non-disjunction during meiosis can also result in abnormal copies of chromosomes. In non-disjunction, sister chromatids can end up sticking together during either meiosis 1 or 2, and thus do not separate normally. Down syndrome, or trisomy 21, most often results from meiotic non-disjunction. In total, this represents 95% of cases of Down syndrome, with the majority of non-disjunction events occurring in meiosis 1. The result of non-disjunction increases with advanced maternal age, from about 1 out of 1,500 in women younger than 20 years to 1 out of 25 in women older than 45 years. Of the remaining 5 cases of Down syndrome, 4% result from an unbalanced Robertsonian translocation. The remaining 1% of cases are due to a rare genetic process called mosaicism. This unique process does not occur during gamete production, but is a post-fertilization error in mitosis. In mosaicism, some, but not all cells, contain an extra copy of chromosome 21. For Edwards syndrome, or trisomy 18, it is most often caused by meiotic non-disjunction, but some cases may be due to partial trisomy involving only a segment of the chromosome or mosaicism. The same is true for Patel syndrome, or trisomy 13. Now let's focus on the clinical presentations of each of these trisomies, as each present with a unique array of clinical signs. Among the three trisomies, Down syndrome is the most common among live births. This is followed by Edwards syndrome, and then by Patel syndrome. People with Down syndrome live well into adulthood. However, those with Edwards and Patel syndromes rarely live past a few years old. Patients with Down syndrome often have congenital heart disease as the most common cause of death in early life, and their risk for Alzheimer's disease increases starting at age 40 years. Down syndrome patients present with flat facies, prominent epicanthal folds, and single palmar creases on their hands. Down syndrome is also associated with duodenal atresia, Hirschsprung disease, and certain types of congenital heart disease like atrial septal defect. They are also at increased risk of developing leukemia, like AML. Patients with Edwards syndrome are born with micrognathia, low-set ears, clenched hands with overlapping fingers, rocker-bottom feet, and have limited hip adduction. Patients with Patel syndrome are born with microcephaly, holoprosencephaly, and often have cleft lip or palate, polydactyly, umbilical hernia or omphalocele, and rocker-bottom feet. Both Edwards syndrome and Patel syndrome are also associated with increased risk for congenital heart defects and renal defects. And all three syndromes are associated with some degree of intellectual disability. Now, let's do a pop quiz on what you've just learned. Down syndrome, Edwards syndrome, and Patel syndrome can all present with abnormal findings involving the hands. What are they? In Down syndrome, there's a single palmar crease. In Edwards syndrome, there are overlapping fingers. And in Patel syndrome, usually it's polydactyly. Since we've been talking a lot about genetics, the next natural question you want to ask about autosomal trisomies is, can we detect their presence in utero? The answer is yes, and usually we do this using prenatal ultrasound soft markers. Ultrasound is the most commonly used modality to image a fetus. About 12 and 20 weeks into the pregnancy, a routine ultrasound is performed to generally examine the fetus and able to screen for certain soft factors associated with chromosomal abnormalities. But be careful and do note that these soft factors are not specific to trisomies or chromosomal abnormalities and can be due to a variety of other causes. Further imaging or more invasive testing may be needed for follow-up of a suspicious finding. The first trimester screening ultrasound measures the thickness of a translucent space at the fetus's neck, or nuca, called nuchal translucency, or NT. An elevated NT suggests a higher risk that the fetus has Down syndrome or a similar chromosomal abnormality. The second trimester screening ultrasound checks for major anatomic abnormalities, such as cleft lip, polydactyly, or abdominal wall defects, which are associated with Patel syndrome, and renal anomalies, which can be associated with both Edwards and Patel syndrome. Prenatal ultrasound can also identify some fetal cardiac anomalies that are associated with the trisomies. In addition to ultrasound, there are also maternal serum markers that can be screened to detect the risk of fetal aneuploidy. There are two commonly used serum tests. There is the first trimester combined test, which is usually performed between weeks 9 and 13 gestation, and the second trimester quadruple screen, which is performed at 15 to 22 weeks gestation. The first trimester combined test analyzes two maternal serum markers. One, pregnancy-associated plasma protein A, or PAPPA, and two, free beta human chorionic gonadotropin, or beta-HCG. This test has a sensitivity of approximately 60% when used alone, or 80% when combined with the nuchal translucency test. PAPPA would be decreased in trisomies 21, 18, and 13. Beta-HCG is decreased in trisomy 18 and 13, but it would be increased in Down syndrome. The second trimester quadruple screen, typically called the quad screen, analyzes four maternal serum biomarkers. One, maternal serum alpha-fetoprotein, abbreviated MSAFP. Two, beta-HCG. Three, estriol. And four, inhibin A. A fetus with Down syndrome would present with decreased MSAFP, decreased estriol, but increased beta-HCG and inhibin A. A fetus with Edwards syndrome would present with decreased levels of all four quad screen markers. The quad screen has higher sensitivity and specificity for trisomy 21 and 18, but less so for trisomy 13. Therefore, the quad screen may be abnormal in Patel syndrome, but is not as sensitive or specific. The key here is to remember that abnormalities found during a routine pregnancy ultrasound or serum screening, such as a high nuchal translucency or abnormal serum markers, are not by themselves diagnostic of any particular trisomy. When an abnormality is found, a doctor may recommend follow-up testing with chorionic villus sampling, CVS, or amniocentesis. These two procedures are able to obtain fetal genetic material that can be further analyzed by karyotyping or other genetic techniques. Let's review. What quad screen results would be seen in Down syndrome? That would have decreased MSAFP and estriol, but increased beta-HCG and inhibin A. And that's all we have today on autosomal trisomy. Now let's see if we've completed our goals for today's episode. First, can you explain a Robertsonian translocation and how it can result in trisomies? A Robertsonian translocation is when one long arm of one chromosome is translocated to another chromosome to become one single joint chromosome. Robertsonian translocations usually occur between the acrocentric chromosomes, which are 13, 14, 15, 21, and 22. Translocations can cause monosomies and trisomies in a fertilized gamete. Second, can you describe the three most common trisomies and their clinical presentations? Down-Edwards and Patel syndromes are the three most common trisomies and have distinguished clinical features. Patients with Down syndrome live the longest, whereas infants with Edwards or Patel syndrome usually die within 1 year. All three syndromes are associated with some degree of intellectual disability. Down syndrome patients present with flat facies, prominent epicanthal folds, and single palmar creases on their hands. These patients often have congenital heart disease as the most common cause of death in early life, and their risk for Alzheimer's disease increases starting at age 40 years. Patients with Edwards syndrome are born with micrognathia, low-set ears, clenched hands with overlapping fingers, rocker-bottom feet, and have limited hip adduction. Patients with Patel syndrome are born with microcephaly, hollow and prosencephaly, and often have cleft lip or palate, polydactyly, umbilical hernia or omphalocele, and rocker bottom feet. Finally, can you differentiate the diagnoses of Down syndrome, Edwards syndrome, and Patel syndrome based on ultrasound findings and altered serum marker levels? Ultrasound abnormalities and nuchal translucency measurements are helpful in raising suspicion for Down syndrome and warrant further testing. The first trimester screen measures maternal serum PAPPA and beta-HCG. PAPPA would be decreased in trisomies 21, 18, and 13. beta-HCG is decreased in trisomy 18 and 13, but would be increased in Down syndrome. The second trimester quad screen measures maternal serum MSAFP, beta-HCG, estriol, and inhibin A. A fetus with Down syndrome would present with decreased MSAFP, decreased estriol, but increased beta-HCG and inhibin A. A fetus with Edwards syndrome would present with decreased levels of all four quad screen markers. The quad screen may be abnormal in Patel syndrome, but is not sensitive or specific. Remember that you are seeing a 40-year-old woman who is pregnant for the first time in your OB clinic. You have just performed her first trimester screening ultrasound, which shows a thickened nuchal translucency measurement. You explain to this patient that this is a finding suggestive of a genetic disorder and that further testing is recommended. What further diagnostic testing would you recommend? Having learned about the types of prenatal ultrasounds and maternal serum markers you can use as screening tests, you begin by ordering a test to measure maternal serum PAPPA and beta-HCG. These are two markers you can assess during the first trimester. The PAPPA comes back low, and the beta-HCG returns elevated, both of which are suggestive of Down syndrome. In the patient's early second trimester, you order the quad screen, which reveals that the maternal serum alpha-fetoprotein is low and that inhibin A is high. With these results, you sit down with your patient and her husband and explain, the ultrasound and blood results are consistent with Down syndrome, but are not 100% diagnostic. We can be sure with an amniocentesis, but that is your choice. The patient and her husband elect to have an amniocentesis performed, which shows a karyotype of 47XX plus 21. This is consistent with Down syndrome, and the patient chooses to carry their pregnancy to term, and their daughter is born at 38 weeks. And that's our show for today. Make sure to like and subscribe on Apple Podcasts if you like what you have heard. Remember, your feedback helps us improve. Happy studying, and see you next time.